Hey guys, it's Mike. It's another Smart Kitchen Catch-Up with my friend Ashley Dino. We catch you up on all the Smart Kitchen news that's happening, including in its debut with Perch. We talk about this new category called Guided Cooking Systems, as well as the trend of big companies like GE and Whirlpool using crowdfunding as a way to test viability of new kitchen products. Enjoy. Welcome to the Smart Kitchen Show. My name is Mike Wolf. The Smart Kitchen Show is a podcast about the kitchen, technology, and food, and the story of a conference that brings all those things together. I'm your host, Michael Wolf, and I put this podcast together because in the process of creating the Smart Kitchen Summit, I've been meeting lots of great folks that I thought you should hear from too. If you'd like to listen to more Smart Kitchen shows, you can find them in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also go to smartkitchensummit.com/show. The Smart Kitchen Summit will be back in 2016 on October 5th and 6th in Seattle. If you'd like to go, just go to smartkitchensummit.com. for more information. And now, on to the show.
So, Mike, what did you do this week?
Well, besides working very hard on the summit and lots of things around that I'm late on a lot of stuff on, I actually was asked to give a guest lecture at the University of Washington. And I have to say, I'm like the last person I ever would have thought would have been invited to a university to give a guest lecture.
You're very distinguished, though. It doesn't surprise me. What were you lecturing on?
Are you talking about my gray hair?
What was the lecture on?
It was actually on the future of the kitchen.
Okay, interesting. And who were you talking to? What was the students who are sort of studying technology?
This is what's petrifying, is speaking to university students, because I feel like, and you may have sensed this, I feel like I'm always worried about growing out of touch and becoming like my dad at some point. So these are all 20-something, maybe even some teens, college students. They're generally freshmen and sophomores, and they're at the beginning of this kind of culinary studies track that this great lady, Anne-Marie Gloster, is she's starting this new track about food studies at the University of Washington. She had Chris Young come and speak. We know Chris Young from Chef Steps,
sure,
and Modernist Cuisine fame, and they recommended to Anne-Marie that I come and speak. So I was very, very honored, a little bit nervous. And I just talked about the future of the smart kitchen and some of the technology that we're seeing. So it was pretty easy, because I'm doing this every day. Mm. And people, you know how it is. If you want to talk to someone about what you do every day and they don't do that at all, it's actually kind of easy to do. It was a lot of fun. And I think they enjoyed it. I've had a few emails afterwards. And
did you try to Snapchat them afterwards to try
no,
to show
but
that
I,
your level of coolness?
I did want to do the on-stage selfie that I've seen some folks do, where you get them in the background and you're but I just didn't have the guts.
To
I didn't have
go
the guts.
It.
I didn't know how awkward that would be. If that's the old guy trying to be cool, so I skipped that. I wanted to do it, but I skipped it.
Yeah.
Probably I wanted to do it because I didn't know if people would ever believe me that I actually gave a lecture at University of Washington. So.
Right. To validate. Well, good. I mean, it's interesting to hear that, cooking programs are integrating, talking about technology more. I think that'll probably become even more of a theme. Maybe you'll get to travel the country as a traveling speaker.
Yeah. We'll see about that. Another old institution that's starting to embrace technology and new ways of doing things are big companies. This is my smooth segue to the first story, by the way. Did you notice that? That was very good.
I did. We always have really good segues to the first story.
And so actually this is really fun. I wrote about this week, and you and I have been chatting about how GE with First Build and Whirlpool more recently, that I've noticed at least with W Labs, have been using an incubator model to create new products. And then even the more interesting part, in many ways, is using crowdfunding as a way to test viability of new product concepts.
Yeah, so both of them are partnering with Indiegogo, which I think is sort of an interesting way to diverge a little bit from the Kickstarter model of just having startups be on there and crowdfunding, and having these big companies almost use crowdfunding as a test market and to sort of look at what's the interest level. And I think it's actually really smart because successful crowdfunding campaigns nowadays are getting, you know, they get lots of buzz about the product and lots of consumer interest. And I think big companies are often like stuck in the stodgy way of advertising and marketing. So I think it opens up, you know, ways for them to, you know, launch and introduce their ideas. Interestingly, I think both of the products, one's a homebrew fermenter from GE and one is a cold brew system for coffee. I might have done that backwards, the two backwards. But either way, they're both beverage systems, which I think is also interesting. It's something we've been talking about both as a summit theme, right? It's like lots of connected beverage systems and taking like what used to happen in big factories and bringing it into the home.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, I was like kind of nerdy and like correcting people on the W Labs.
Yes.
Home brewer versus fermenter. Like I was complaining how every media organization got it wrong. It's not a home brewer. It just ferments. It's like yes. Afterwards. So thank you for your little nod of a recognition.
I tried to be very specific there. I knew you were going to correct me if I did it wrong.
Yeah, I think, you know, Indiegogo actually is, it's interesting that you point that out. They have been trying to evolve from being just a pure startup crowdfunding mechanism and platform to really embracing the enterprise. And it's, I think it's interesting that these blue chip corporate brands with regards to their incubator side have used primarily Indiegogo. So I think that's actually an interesting thing to watch. I think this is the third crowdfunding campaign that we're seeing coming up this summer for the cold brew system from GE's first build. That's the third one that they've done on Indiegogo. They first had their, an induction cooking system. And then they had their ice maker,
right?
Which was an interesting choice. And then now they're coming up with their cold brew. I'm actually excited about the cold brew. I want to know what the pricing is. I don't,
yep.
There's no visibility on that yet, but I actually may back this one.
I know. I feel actually the same way. I don't have lots of gadgets in my kitchen because I like clean countertops, but I love cold brew coffee. So I'm excited to see what price point it comes in at. I also think, you know, it's interesting because I think big companies have an advantage for when they go to a crowdfunding model, because a lot of folks in the crowdfunding space struggle with the, you know, delivery of products, right? So, shipping and getting things into production and then eventually shipping them on time. Whereas big companies benefit from the fact that they've, you know, most of the time have that model down already, right? They've got their production and they've got their, you know, sort of product, you know, creation models already in place. They don't have to, they're not doing it for the first time. So they may be able to deliver faster and people might actually be more satisfied. A lot of people who back Kickstarters get annoyed because they keep getting delayed and they don't get the product. I'm still waiting on something that I backed like a year ago. You know, that's really common, but well, who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. Especially with hardware, like hardware is hard. Yeah. I mean, it's almost become a cliche now. And I feel like Indiegogo is onto something. I feel like crowdfunding is going to migrate towards more enterprise-based production and campaigns, particularly on the hardware side, because like you said, these companies will deliver. They have the resources, and we've heard so many horror stories now of these startups crowdfunding something. They run out of funds. Sometimes they'll actually try to sell their products on Amazon before they actually get to their backers just because they run out of money. So it makes a lot of sense. I think it's an interesting trend to watch. We'll keep an eye on it for sure over here.
Absolutely.
And another trend, this is actually, I'm stepping on your toes here with my segue, but because you were supposed to do this. We're really smooth. By the way, side note, our friend Richard Gunther, our mutual friend, he's a great podcaster over at Home On. He said we have a good rapport. Like
I know. I'm so honored by that because I feel like he has such high standards that coming from him, it's very humbling.
I constantly tell Richard like he's a way better podcaster than me because like he's so professional. And I feel like I'm winging it all the time, much like this segue now, which I wanted to talk about Google Home Echo and all these virtual assistants and voice recognition devices. Like, we wanted to talk about what those will do in the kitchen. And I haven't really written a piece on this yet. I want to do that, but I think it's worthy of conversation. And it's something so simple as like what we call in the business of smart kitchen, meat hands. Like you're messing with, like you had that ground beef, you made the patties, and then you need to open the fridge. Like, wouldn't it be nice to say, Alexa, open the fridge, or something like that, right?
Yeah. Well, I think also Echo's, a lot of Echo's features in the beginning were lent itself to being in the kitchen, like some of the, you know, ordering things and adding things to your shopping list. And so initially, a lot of people, I think, put the Echo in their kitchen. That's where I first put mine. And so it sort of like naturally became like that's where the sort of hub, voice hub lives, is in the kitchen. And it's interesting though, because Google Home, obviously sort of newer product, a lot of people commented on the design of it in terms of it looking a little bit like an air freshener. I saw someone comment, which yeah. I actually, you know, that might have totally been their intention, right? Because that's a thing that you actually have in the home. It doesn't look like a big, you know, sort of black cone or cylinder sticking out. One of the complaints that my wife has is that we just redid our kitchen and we have this nice backsplash now and these nice countertops, and then the Echo just kind of sticks out in front of it, sort of like a sore thumb. But, you know, Google Home has a little bit more, I don't know, homey feel, I guess. And that could be interesting. And it looks a little smaller too, which could make it more, you know, better for the kitchen. However, Google Home didn't start out as like where Echo, where you sort of adding things to your shopping list. Like it wasn't inherently kitchen based. So maybe it won't naturally go into the kitchen. Like maybe people adopting it will put in their living room, or it's much more, you know, they touted like the smart home features and functionality. So yeah. I don't know whether or not it becomes a kitchen device. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's been evident for about a year now that Google has been trying to really shake things up from a form factor and look perspective. Mm-hmm. When they announced their On Hub reinvention of the router, this concept, you know, they wanted to go back to the drawing board and redo the router.
Yeah.
And that thing was very different looking. It looked a little bit like the Echo, but they also came up with this Maker program to allow makers and designers to create fun skins that you can make your router look like a lamp, for example.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you're right. The first instantiation of the Google Home does look like an air freshener. Maybe Amazon has been kind of targeting the kitchen as kind of its first one they want to focus on, whereas Google's maybe is targeting the bathroom for the Google Home.
Right.
Maybe that's where they want the Google Home to reside. I don't know. I'm just kind of half kidding.
Well, Amazon naturally has the commerce
you know,
backing that Google doesn't have, right? So you have like the ordering functionality of the Echo is one of my favorite things. Like I'm a dedicated Prime user and I order stuff all the time, or I add stuff to my shopping list. I do it constantly. So Google doesn't really have that same natural integration, I think. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if they could start integrating with smart toilets and, you know, like Kohler faucets or something and be like the bathroom hub, which is like, could be a whole other conference, by the way.
Let someone else take the smart bathroom conference. I mean, actually, the reason, you know, not joking so much, is I felt like the kitchen was a great place to kind of explore more deeply. I feel like it is the epicenter of living in the home, or kind of the center of living in the home. It's like you said, it's oftentimes the command center for ordering stuff, whether that's food or other things. And so that you're right. The Echo commerce piece is really interesting. We'll talk more about the Apple efforts, because yes. I don't think there's enough there to discuss. But after WWDC, let's revisit that, because apparently Apple has some sort of answer to the Echo coming out. We'll dive into that more deeply.
Yeah, and you can use your serious pun that you made on LinkedIn the other day, and we'll just all groan in the background.
Yeah, I've never met a bad pun I haven't liked. speaking of kind of the kitchen being like more intelligent in the epicenter of things, I think Innit has designs on making the kitchen just really smart. And they've had a lot going. It's been a busy first half for them of the year this year.
Yeah. So for folks who aren't familiar, we've talked about Innit a lot, but Innit is technology platform, kind of a B2B organization that they launched at our summit. They're putting data in, or taking the data out of food and making the stuff in our kitchen intelligent based on that data. So partnering with appliance companies and things like that. So I saw the app at South by Southwest. Kevin showed it to me and I was like fascinated. It was like everything in his refrigerator, and it was sort of a demo. But now folks are going to get to kind of see all of the Innit technology live and in action, right? At the Perch showcase home or demo in Soho in Manhattan. And they're launching that in June, which so folks will be able to go in and actually see like what a kitchen of the future really could look like backed by Innit technology.
Yeah. So Perch and the Innit relationship was, I think, announced at CES this year. They actually opened up Perch Soho, I think, in mid-May.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can actually go to the Innit smart kitchen showcase within Perch now. It's like a 32,000 monster 32,000 square foot monster space in the middle of Soho. But they're having a world premiere party. Init is having a world premiere of Init in the Perch Soho. And so we're going to that. I think we're both going to be there I think it's June 16th or so. So I'm excited about that. I spent a little bit of time yesterday on the phone with Kevin Brown, their president. Mm-hmm. And he was just talking a little bit about what they're doing right now and kind of their first half. They've had a lot of traction meeting with a lot of, obvious appliance makers. They're also spending a lot of time with food companies, food product companies, whether that's like a frozen food manufacturer, et cetera. Because they want to kind of be the bridge. And it is an interesting conversation that we've never really thought about, you know, how you can take all this data from food and if there's a way to let the devices better understand what this is, use machine learning and machine vision as a way to maybe recognize it, other sensor arrays within either your refrigerator, cold storage, or in the cooking side of things in the oven, you can really change things. You can put an oven on autopilot. You can mm-hmm. let food be ordered automatically. Kind of the mind just boggles with all the possibilities.
Yeah, there's also the aspect of food storage and waste and being able to better tell like when to use things and when things are going to go bad. And I saw a story the other day about how, you know, the average family of four, I forget the pen, I'll have to pull it up. It's how many pounds of food you waste a year just throwing stuff away in your fridge. But the potential for this technology to change that in a major way has implications far beyond just your kitchen, but in terms of like food production and, you know, food shortages around the world and all of that. So I think that's really fascinating. Did Kevin talk at all? One of the things I've been curious about is their desire to sort of showcase the technology to, you know, some consumers, even though they're not a consumer brand, right? Because they're a B2B. They want, you know, to put they want to be the Intel inside, you know, your appliances and your kitchen. So kind of interesting that they're also doing some of this more mainstream consumer awareness.
Yeah, I think there's basically a two-prong goal of the Perch relationship is that they're doing some market education. They're putting the products out there for consumers to see, but also obviously letting, you know, appliance makers come to see all the stuff in action. I think, mm-hmm. I think we're in this market education phase, and to show consumers, and particularly in an influencer market like New York City, where there's lots of media, I think that's really kind of what they're doing. I think that was the goal. And I think it makes so much sense to do this in New York City as kind of their first big splash.
Yeah.
And also for Perch. I mean, Jeffrey Sears, the CEO of Perch, is famously skeptical of a lot of technology, even though they're a very forward-leaning retail storefront, doing some kind of cutting-edge things around experiential retail. He's somewhat skeptical about this stuff. So I think it's a very interesting relationship that he and the folks from Intel have put together.
Yeah, I think it's important when you're developing new technology to look at, like you said, to look at how you can educate folks and start to create demand where there is none in a market that is emerging and brand new. So I think it's really smart of them. And I'm so excited that something is finally happening on the East Coast in our world. I feel like everything's been happening on the West Coast and I just have to like hear about it. But now I get to go, which is awesome. Well, speaking of shows and things that you sort of have been talking about and writing about. So when you went to Housewares in March, you sort of wrote about this trend that was emerging in smart kitchen. You kind of dubbed it the guided cooking systems. And there's been kind of some news and thoughts around that that you wrote about in the newsletter. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of like the broader smart cooking side of things. If you look at these new category of appliances coming out, you know, you've seen smart cooking services, whether that's something like a Pantelligent, the Cinder, which has sensors in it. And then you've also seen, you know, this movement towards precision cooking and where you have obviously sous vide immersion circulators like a Nova mm-hmm. and Sincere. But we've also seen another trend and, you know, we've seen this idea of visual guidance and kind of the guided cook where you have, whether it's just something so simple as an app showing you the step-by-step instructions at the simplest level. It could be something, you know, the BuzzFeed Tasty, you know, like basically a cooking video in 30 seconds. I had never seen like a product from a company put all this together. But we're starting to see that now. And I really noticed it at Housewares. You had companies like the Heston Q, which is a division of Meijer. They basically were the – and we may have talked about this before – I'm sure I've talked about it at some point. Meld got acquired. That was this interesting startup, got acquired by Heston. and they became the Heston Q Smart Cooking. And what they did is they put together this induction heating system with a sensor-based Bluetooth pan, as well as an app-driven control and visual guidance side of things, where you can basically walk through cooking anything, all the way from prep to putting it in the pan, cooking it, and then taking it out. And I just feel like there wasn't really a description for any of this. It didn't really fit into like the multi-cooker category. It didn't fit into just like the new cooking precision cooking side of things. So I dubbed it Guided Cooking Systems. And I had an interesting podcast last week. We've yet to publish this, but I had a conversation with Darren Bangeroff, the CTO of Heston Q, and he kind of felt like, you know, this was right. There's like these, if you have these three elements together, it's something different. And so that was kind of got me thinking, and I wrote that piece. It's an interesting evolution. I think we're going to see more of these. You know, I had the meeting at, we talked about this on the last podcast. We had the meeting at Williams-Sonoma, and this guy flew out from Denmark. This guy named Peter. He has a product for his company called Zetov. It's Z-T-O-V-E. I think it's supposed to be a play on stove. I don't know. But he had essentially the same thing. But he had designed this in his home. He's an engineer. Mm. Now he's starting to see if he could productize it. And it was essentially the same idea of a sensor-based pan with an induction heating system and burner and app-driven control. And so it was somewhat similar to the Heston Q, and he's just kind of in the startup mode, very much in the startup mode, trying to get his feel for it in Europe. So I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I think the concept of, you know, the possibility of sensors, right? Like the whole IoT is based on what the myriad of applications of sensor technology can do. And this is a really interesting specific concept within the kitchen. But it's also, I feel like one of the, to me, it's a very useful, I can see this becoming a mainstream adoptable technology, because people are, generally speaking, your average cook, I don't think people really have a sense of how do you heat something to perfection? I know how to throw something on the stovetop and sort of mix it around and kind of when it's done, right? Like a general sense, but I don't, you know, I think you talked about cooking the perfect salmon at Housewares using the Heston Q system. And the idea that you don't have to think about when to turn the heat up or down, the system really, all you sort of have to do is do the mechanical stuff that, you don't have a robot for yet, right? So putting the things in the pan and seasoning and whatever, but the rest of that guesswork is taken out for you. And I think that's solving an actual problem for a lot of people. So I'm excited to watch sort of what we're dubbing the GCS area.
Another key aspect of it was the modularity of it. I mean, I mentioned that in the article, but this idea of being able to use the burner with a variety of different cooking cookware, and that could be a pan to a pot to something else. And so certainly the Heston Q has that. They have a pan. They also have a pot. The Zetov, they have both as well. The Aliso Smart Cooking Hub, which is another one I put in this category, has modularity where they have their deep water container where you can do, water-based cooking, or you can do a broth or stew or something like that, or as well as steam-based cooking, as well as also put something on a flat, basically griddle. They have a griddle. So I think modularity is a key component of this as well. So if you have all three of these things, you have some level of modularity to cook out, to swap out the cookware. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think the ability to use different systems, to be able to cook a variety of different things and not just one thing. I think some of the gadgets that come out in Smart Kitchen, you wonder about, it's very tailored to one type of food, one type of meal. But to your point, it's to be able to sort of swap in and out and cook a variety of different things is, I think, really important and interesting. And I hope that people do some demos at the Smart Kitchen Summit, because I would love to see this in action. This is something I can see myself buying. I'm not a very good cook.
Actually, another cooking device within the Smart Kitchen that has gotten a lot of traction is, and kind of related to this, is the Pantelligent Smart Pan, which you've probably heard of. They're one of the first out there doing a sensor-based pan.
Yep.
I missed this when they first had their blog up in April, but they announced their autopilot feature. So I want to talk about that a little bit, because I think it's interesting. And also, they actually connect into they do have a semi-partnership with Belkin Wemo. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But what Autopilot is, it's a new software feature on the Pantelligent control app on their smart pan. To do that, you actually need a burner that they recommend, also a Wemo switch. So they actually have on their website, and I think within the app, a recommended couple of devices you could go buy on Amazon. So essentially, they're almost trying to do like create your own guided cooking system where they use a Wemo as well as a burner. And through the software, they're basically trying to make the Pantelligent more than the original just connected pan.
Yeah, kind of like a DIY version of what like a more, you know, structured Heston Q type system would
exactly.
be.
Exactly. They're basically trying to do that. So it seems like maybe this is – they kind of see the writing on the wall where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
And they're – like you said, they're trying to create the DIY. But the thing is when you put it all together, you're spending as much money or more than if you did one of these self-contained systems.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we've seen with DIY smart home, you know, there's a certain amount of folks who don't want to have to cobble things together themselves or deal with too much of the tech side of it. They just want to buy something kind of packaged that works and out of the box. So that sort of remains to be seen and adoption wise. But I think, you know, Pantelligent has definitely been one of the early, you know, they were sort of one of the early smart pans. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they evolve. I'm waiting to see when some of these guided cooking systems start to work with voice, because I think about like the app guided part of it and you're looking at your app and it's telling you what to do step by step. And, you know, other things are automatically happening on your stovetop. I think about like, what if, you know, Alexa or Siri or whoever could sort of, what's the Google Home's name? What's her name? Or do they have a name for their... The woman who talks out of Google Home? I don't know what it is.
I can't remember. I thought it was just Google. It used to be Google Now or Hey Google.
Got it. Okay.
I don't know if they actually came up with a female name. That'd almost be too much Alexa-ish. Like, I feel like they've already kind of clearly emulated.
Yeah, they don't want to be like that. Yeah. Okay. So whatever it is, you know, to be able to read the instructions to you from the app or, you know, tell you what to do next without you having to look at something, again, that hands-free element in the kitchen. So I'm interested to see if that, you know, becomes a evolution of all of this.
Yeah, I totally think you're right. And I think that a lot of these device makers are working right now trying to integrate with Alexa. So I haven't done a deep dive on the Alexa skills. There's 1,000 of them now. It'd be interesting to kind of dive in and see how many cooking-related ones there are at this point. I imagine there's a few in there.
That's a good research project. We should do that and talk about that on the podcast someday. Well, speaking of sort of, you know, putting, I guess, smart, this is going to be a bad segue because there is no segue, just putting smarts in everything, right? In your pans and in everything in your kitchen. So I think one of the interesting kind of media topics that's been in the news lately has been around like how much smart is too much? Like, do we need to connect everything? Like the backlash of IoT. And Joanna Stern had a really interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal this week about, you know, it was basically like a tongue-in-cheek, which I always, you know, I like her writing. She's funny. But she wrote like, you know, make the madness stop, like stop putting stuff, you know, connection and everything. And it was in response to, you know, the smart tampon that was released, which has nothing to do with the kitchen, except that I think in smart kitchen, we're also seeing some, you know, gadgets and things pop up where, you know, potentially the connection part of it is not necessary. It's a fun to have, or maybe
the smart bottle opener, for example.
Yes. So the smart bottle opener. So tell us about the smart bottle opener.
Oh, there's a Kickstarter campaign right now for the smart bottle opener, the Box Bottle Opener X.
Yeah.
The world's first smart bottle opener. I'm going to take their word on this because I imagine no one else has tried this, but, but this easily could have been, if it wasn't, in Joanna's piece. There was also, and this is un-kitchen related, but my friend Dave and I were talking about the app that will alert you when your zipper's down. Like, there's actually like people creating technology. So to Joanna's point, people are kind of going nuts. I think there's a broader lesson to be learned here, though. I mean, I've written about this before. When you put technology first and just want to shove technology into anything, and rather than trying to solve like real consumer problems, although I've had my fly's been down a couple times, so actually maybe that may be useful. But like, there's a lesson to be learned. Like, think about it from the consumer standpoint. Is it really worth creating a smart bottle opener? What is that? What problem is that solving?
Right. And in the case of Box, I think, you know, their whole thing is like, you can, it tells your friends, it creates like a leaderboard for how, like when you open a bottle, and then it gives you like, you know, it's like the whole,
there's some gamification there too.
Exactly. Right. And so, you know, and there's some space for stuff like that, where I think if there's social aspects to it, you know, it's integrated with, I guess you can share messages to friends over, it says Facebook Messenger and Slack. I'm not really sure about the integration with Slack there. Like, is that really the
maybe on Fridays?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, our Slack channels get a little silly sometimes, but that seems a little over the top. I think maybe like this could be a good Snapchat thing. Like, you know, I could see the application. However, to your point, the stuff that solves real problems probably is going to be, you know, have a longer lifespan than Box. But we'll see. Who knows? I'm sure they'll get backed, because people who back Kickstarters love stuff like this, I will say. That's definitely the crowd that loves that stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got fully funded.
Hey, let's talk about what's going on with the Smart Kitchen Summit, because after all, we are putting together a conference, and you've been hard at work, and we've been hard at work bringing on new media partners.
Yes, I am so excited about our media partners this year. So we are, first and foremost, we've been talking about this for a little while, but we're working with the folks at Good Housekeeping. Sharon Frank is on our advisory council, and they are, you know, super interested in the space. So I'm really excited about that. We also recently started talking to the folks at Reviewed.com. So many people are familiar with Reviewed.com. They're kind of synonymous with CNET to a certain extent. They are a division of USA Today, and they do lots of consumer reviews and have been doing some pretty extensive reviews on smart appliances and kind of getting into the kitchen space more and more. They have a whole smart home section. So we're going to be working with the folks there, and some of their top editorial folks are potentially going to be speaking at the event. We've also got Digital Trends, which is really exciting. I think Jenny McGrath, who is going to also be speaking at the event, who's their home editor, she was at the summit last year, and she's definitely been covering she covers smart home, but obviously a lot in the kitchen as well. And then I'll let you tell one of the very exciting speakers that we just recently added. I'll let you reveal who that is.
Drum roll. Can you do like a verbal drum roll?
I can. I'm totally
okay.
Not that
talented. Okay. Well, no, we're excited to have Carly Knobloch, who many people know from HGTV. She does a lot of their smart home discussions and conversations. She's basically the in-house, or she's the HGTV smart home expert, basically for them, as well as some other publications. And she's coming to do some things for us at Smart Kitchen Summit. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, she's like a pretty renowned consumer tech, you know, expert in terms of like talking to consumers about the types of tech that they need and want in their lives. And she's also just like super fun and great personality, and is going to, I think, be a really great addition. And I know a lot of our folks are excited to meet her. So we are, you know, really excited to be working with all these media partners. We also have the Retail Observer and Green Builder Media. And it's interesting because they're all from different you know, sort of spaces, right? Like Retail Observer is directed at small retailers. We've got some of the green building folks or the builder space. We've got the consumer space, the tech space. So it really does show, I think, the power of what the smart kitchen space is becoming and who is excited and interested in kind of getting in from all the different audiences. So I think it is going to be great. And a lot of those folks are going to be speaking. So, and it's 4 months away, by the way, in case you forgot.
It's coming to lightning fast. And tell me to get media. I'm like a media nerd. But like the different, you talked about the different media partners being different, and that's like, that is also from like the type of audiences they reach. Like Retail Observer is like you said, this small retail, focused publication, but they're like a trade publication, which I'm a big fan of trade publications. I've worked for trade publication companies before. So I love that we brought them on. I think it's a great publication. And then like Reviewed is like you said, they're synonymous with kind of that review-based site like CNET and Consumer Reports. So just a great variety.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be a great event, and we just closed early bird tickets. So now there's only two ticket levels left. So for the next 2 months, we've got the early bird tickets for sale until the end of July. And you know, I think we're seeing more and more people who are like, it's a must go to event at this point. So you definitely want to get your ticket before those run out over the summer. And we are going to be continuing to add speakers and making exciting announcements. So keep an eye out on the Twitter feed and the blog and, of course, our podcast.
Yeah, and we'll have some programming. We've been working on programming. We didn't want to put anything up until we had it shaped out to some extent. And that's shaping up, so we'll have something up here in June pretty soon. So keep an eye out for that as well.
Yes. And we're going to publish this podcast, and you're going to publish the Heston Q podcast with Darren, which will be exciting, and more to come. Hopefully we'll have more of these podcasts over the summer as well. Publish with some more regularity. That's our goal.
We'll work on it.
We'll work on it.
All right, Ashley. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
This Market Show is brought to you by Technology.fm, Next Market Insights, and the Smart Kitchen Summit. All the music for today's show is created by Paul Tyan, T-Y-A-N. Check him out on SoundCloud. You can now find the Smart Kitchen Show on iTunes, or just go to smartkitchensummit.com/show. For Season 2, we hope to bring you lots more stories and different conversations and mix up the format a little bit. So stay tuned. And if you want to come to Smart Kitchen Summit, you know where to go, smartkitchensummit.com.